Gotta go. Welcome to Let's Talk on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Mr. Talk in the House, and I hope everybody's having a great day, because I am rocking and rolling. I'm ready, energized, and having a wonderful Wednesday. It's the middle of the week, y'all. I'm telling you, you should be happy. You know what? I am having a good time, man. I am happy all the day. All right. Hey, y'all listening to Let's Talk on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Mr. Talk, and man, it's a great day to be living. I am feeling just like, whoa. I'm good at what I do, and I'm glad I am, because if I wasn't good at what I do, I wouldn't be happy to be doing it, and y'all make me happy, and man, I'm telling you, it's just a wonderful day. It really is. It is an outstanding day. And I got some music for you today. We got an outstanding show planned for you today. It's like a continuation from yesterday. You know, the show is Wealth Creation and Community, Localism and Community Reinvestment. Now, I'm telling you, man, that you can't shoot. Y'all just don't know. You know, we tried to do the individual yesterday. Now we're going to work on the community today. And, you know, I put a couple of things out on the description pad. And one of them was, in the absence of leadership, it is imperative that Black Americans become singularly devoted to wealth creation and wealth redistribution in Black communities. This means using all devices, especially local, municipal, government, and Black organizations, to craft and promote ideologies and programs that enhance wealth building, whether through personal savings or simply by keeping money in communities. Ooh. A plan for self-empowerment must begin with the realistic analysis of Blacks' access, and lead to the development of strategies to maximize their fullest potential. Organize and power will come. And, you know, I took those sayings. It's two separate sayings. I took one out of Power Economics by Dr. Claude Anderson, and I took another one out of both books were by Dr. Claude Anderson. One was Powernomics, and the one was Black Labor, White Labor. I mean, Black Labor, White Wealth. So, you know, those are some of the things we're going to be discussing today. And, you know, it has already been put out there how we can achieve it. So our job is to, just to make it happen. You know what I mean? So we're going to be talking a little bit about that today and having a little fun in between. All right. So now if you want to be a part of the show today, that's no problem. Just give me a call, 347-838-8622. Email me, ericletstalk@gmail.com. You can join me in the chat room also. All they do is log in to www.blogtalkradio.com/Mr. Talk. Now, let me understand. Let me help you explain something to you, okay? Now, if you log into the chat room and you just log in, you will come into the chat room as a guest. Okay, as a guest, you have no privileges in the chat room, except for to sit there and watch what everyone else is typing. Now, if you log in with a username, and you can do that by using whatever media site you use, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Vision, or whatever you're using, and you can log in that way. If you log in with your actual username, you have all the privileges to comment on conversations going on in the chat room, things you hear on the air live, and that way. So either way, you're welcome to join us in the chat room, and we always got some type of conversation going on, and you know, we'll be more than happy to have you. All right, now, as far as calling in to on the show, that's no problem. We welcome you. We'd like to hear your voice if you care to share it with us and your opinions. However, just please, when you call in, make sure that you act as an adult, please, and, you know, no profanity, no derogatory terms, no N-words, you know, nothing that if you wouldn't say in front of your mom. And for some of y'all, if you say it in front of your mom, don't say it in my show, okay? I'm just going to have to go on and put that out there now, because some of y'all will say anything in front of your parents. Well, I don't do that. Okay, so, you know, accordingly, please. If not, no problem. I think me and my co-host can handle it. Yeah, we got something special just for you. A special, special suit just for you. That's right. So I just want y'all to know that. And everything will be wonderful. Wonderful and outstanding and gravy and all that good stuff. All right, I see we got Deep H2O in the house. What's up, H2O? How you doing today? Okay, we got guests, 1852, 1879, and I'm sorry, that's 852, 879, 891, and 897. Welcome to the show, y'all. I hope you enjoy it, and thank you for tuning in. All right, so I done did enough chatting, man. I'm telling you, I am feeling good. Y'all feeling good out there today? I know somebody got to be feeling as good as I am, because, man, I'm telling you, it's just something in the air that just got you going, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know what? I feel so good right now. I'm going to give everybody that's a part of my show a big old hand clap. That's right. That's right. I'm giving everybody a hand clap, because you know what? Y'all are outstanding, very intelligent, very astute. And you know, y'all bring up some very, very good points. And, you know, I wouldn't be as smart as I am today without y'all. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know. I know somebody said, oh, Lord, he off his meds again. I am not. I have taken my meds, so get over it. All right. Okay, we got Minty the writer joined us, and of course Divine Design in the house. All right, so we got all these people joining us today, and it's such a good day to be such a friend. It's such a good day to be alive. All right. I know y'all want to hear me singing, so okay. Boy, can y'all tell I'm hype. You know, yeah. All right, so I got my co-host with his hand up. I see you, bro. I'm going to get you in here in a minute. I just got to get this happiness feeling out of the way right about now, because, see, you know, I'm just hype and I'm ready, and I got a Wednesday song mix for you. You know, Man, I was thinking all morning, what can I play? It's Wednesday, man. What can I play to get their spirits up, to make them feel good because it's the middle of the week? You know, what could I play? And you know what? I couldn't just decide on one song. I couldn't decide on one song. I had to go two songs. That's right. And man, let me tell you something. These two songs here, one was done in 1966. The other one was done in 1987. And I guarantee you both of them will get you to going, man. And that's what I want. You know, I want you to be able to go get it. Go get it. All right. So without further ado, man, y'all ready for this? I know y'all are. I know I am. So without further ado, I'm going to give you your music because your music is going to make you smile. Music always makes you smile and puts you in a good mood. All right. So without further ado, y'all, here it is. Your Wednesday afternoon mix.
How you like me now? phony. I'm no phony, I'm the only real macaroni. Playing the mic like it's supposed to be played. New Jack, you all should have stayed out of the business. What is this? Amateur night at the Apollo? Get off this stage. I'm enraged, just like a lion trapped inside of a cage. I'm the real king. Rap is a jungle. I never understood how could one go to a party, watch me, stand around and jock me, become a rapper, then try to rock me. Steaming like a demon, you're screaming and dreaming. I'm from the old school. I used to see men die for less, but I'm not living that way. I let my mic do the talking and let the music play. Now, rap is an art, and I'm like Picasso, but of course, why else would you try so hard to paint a picture, and try to get yourself in my shoes, but they won't fit you, I'm bigger and better, forget about Zephyr, every time I rock the mic, I left a stain in your brain, that will remain, stuck in the back of your brain, until you see me again, respect, I come correct, the rhymes I select. I'm nothing short of perfect, vernacular pure, and I can ensure life or death with my breath. My voice is a cure, I feel life from the words I spread. I'll make a sick man rock on his deathbed. Sucker MCs, I'll make your girl say ow, and she jockin'. Now how you like me now? There's more on the menu, but I relax, cause I'm so far in you. You had enough, I know you're overstuffed, and if I keep going, you'll be throwing up. Oh, rhymes I used to say way back in the day, when you used to come to my parties and pay. Nobody's ever gonna rock me, and this I vow. So all I wanna say is how you like me now.
I'm telling you. Boy, if that didn't get you hype, I don't know what else will. We had some old Temptations coming in to you, senior from the year 1966. I know a lot of y'all wasn't around during that time, but oh well. That was a good song. That was a good year for them, but that's a good year for some music, I'm telling you. 1966. Then we took you 21 years past that and brought in Mr. Cool Moe D. 1987. How you like me now? Oh boy. You know, actually, that was a record. That was a beef record. For those who don't know what beef is, you know, he was fighting with another rapper at the time. You know, a young rapper. You know, who came on the scene and just decided he was going to take on everybody. And, you know, now that rapper's a big-time movie star. What's his name? LL Cool J. Ooh, boy, that's a little nostalgia for you, I'm telling you. But anyway, man, I'm happy with that, boy. I am, my heart is pumping. Ooh, man, it's almost as good as my workout this morning. So I am ready for y'all. Y'all ready for me? I hope we ready for each other, because here it is, man. We going to get it started. Going to get it started. Welcome to Let's Talk on Blog Talk Radio. Me and my co-host, Hakeem, a.k.a. Cloud Nation Radio, is in the house. Now, let me bring him in. Wow. Cloud Nation, a.k.a. Hakeem, what's up, man?
Oh, man, I'm over here jamming like I was in a house party. I'm telling you. All I could think about when after you transitioned from the Temptations to Cool Moe D is I crushed you like a jelly bean. I was thinking of LL, so. it's funny that you played that record.
Right. Like I said, that was the beef record between them two. You know, they were beefing with each other. And the thing about it is, I like it, is they beefed through the records. You know, they didn't actually get into no physicality or anything like that. So, you know, in other words, they helped each other sell records. You know, so Anyway, just memories, man. Just memories, you know. And then the Temptations, man. I'm telling you, you know what? I don't care what song them dudes sing, man. It just was sounded good, especially the original Temptations. Man, I'm telling you, boy, they take you back and make you remember some things. For those that was around during that time. But anyway, I'm going to shut up now. I remember them driving movies in the back of the station wagon. Oh, Lord, I hope she ain't listening. Anyway, man, I'm telling you. All right, I'm good now, y'all. I'm good. I'm good. So, okay, what's going on, man? What you got for us today?
Oh, man, I'm excited about today's topic, but I'm enjoying the day so far. The day has been great. Woke up again. I'm a Bulls fan first, but I'm happy that the Spurs beat Miami, or Cryami, as I like to say it.
Yeah, let me show. Yay, let me go and give them some love too, because you know you're right. You know, cause good night. Fans, you know what I mean? So, yeah, put it to them, San Antonio. Put it to them. I know somebody's going to be talking noise now. Y'all be okay. Anyway. All right, so today we're talking about wealth creation in the community. You know, but before we go there, it's something I want to talk about. You know, and we talked about this a little while on the show, a while ago on the show, and it kind of has taken a somewhat back burner to everything else that's going on in Hollywood. Lord have mercy. I would call it Hollywood in Washington, D.C., and that is immigration. You know, because immigration is a hot thing down here in South Texas and in Arizona, because right now they have so many immigrants coming into the country, they don't have any room to put them anywhere. You know, it's so bad, they're shipping them to places like Arizona, dropping them off in front of a bus station and telling them to just be at the court in 15 days for your hearing. Because you know, they don't have anywhere to go or keep them. You know, they're turning stations and garages and stuff like that into holding cells for all these individuals. Because a lot of them, they're no longer coming over, you know, one by one. They're bringing families now. And most of them are from, like, Guatemala, Honduras, you know, places like that. So it's not as easy to just take them back across the border to Mexico and say, okay, go on back home. You know, and I think a lot of people mention immigration, automatically you think of Mexicans coming across the border, you know, but it's more than that. You know, you got them coming from all kind of third world countries trying to get here for that elusive promise American dream that they hear so much about in their country. You know, and a lot of them are surprised that once they get here, they're not, you know, receptive to them getting here. You know, they're trying to send them back. And I think, you know, when the election's coming up, I think, you know, we should hold some of them politicians' feet to the fire and say, what you going to do about this? You know, either you're going to let them in or you're going to keep them out. But, you know, I mean, that's my take on it. But I just say it's getting just to the point now, if they can't hold them, then what they going to do? What they going to do? You know, you can't. Our court system's already full and crowded with cases. So now you got to go to an immigration judge, and they're going to have the same thing. So what are the immigrants supposed to do? Now, one officer down in South Texas said he compares the influx of immigrants to the people who came to Texas from Katrina. You know, just an influx all of a sudden, and they have nowhere to put them. So I don't know whether that's a good analogy or not, but you know, I can understand what he's saying. So I don't know. What you think about that, Cloud? You know, I think this immigration thing been on the back burner in the Congress for so long. You know, with Cantor losing his dang on seat last night, many feel like, you know, that basically killed the immigration bill, because you know they felt like he was the one that did a lot of compromising, and they didn't like that. And so that's why they kicked him out of office. I wish they would kick a lot of the others out of the office, but, you know, that's how it is. But anyway, what do you think about that before we let our other caller in?
Well, to be honest, when it comes to immigration, I think I'm more of a neutralist when it comes to that whole concept, and I think it's typically because it's such a loaded subject matter. It connects to a variety of different threads, such as human trafficking, and you have to look at imperialism, and you have to look at the influence of slave trades globally, and then you also have to look at the impact of everything from policy colonization, because that's where we went from slave trade to colonizing people using instruments like the NATO and the World Bank and all these other instruments and some of the things that they've added and installed in a variety of these different countries that pretty much land grab and strip away a lot of the resources, which is why we even have a immigration discussion, so to speak, in the first place. People want to leave when you shut down their own country. It's kind of like the next thing that is going to happen once a country starts to go down here. People will flee. It's not nothing new when we look at history. So it's one of those topics, man. It's so loaded, man, and I'm still learning so much about that particular subject, to be honest with you.
Okay. All right. Well, see, and I think that's part of the problem. Everybody look at it as such a loaded gun type of topic that nobody really wants to talk about it. But I think, now it's coming to the time where somebody got to say something and do something about it, because it's really getting out of hand. And these different states, California, Texas, Arizona, I don't know where Nevada, they're running out of room. They barely have enough space for their own. Now you got people, influx of immigrants, not just from Mexico, but from other third parts of the world, and something has to be done. You can't keep sending them back because they're not vain, but keep coming back. Once you send them back, there's another crew coming over. So, and let's be realistic, they aren't catching all of them. See what I'm saying? They're not. So, I think this is a discussion that really needs to be open, and as far as they like to say, make it transparent so everybody know what's going on.
I totally agree. I think I also would say that I'm a believer that if you install laws and provisions, and you put those, you institute that in your constitution, you need to enforce it. I mean, if there's a process for citizenship and a process for living in different countries, then that's the process you have. You need to either decide to enforce it, or you're gonna reform it. And they have to. That's one of the things, like you said, that they have to make a decision. And there can't continue to be a gray area. And it sounds like that's a big part of the problem, because there are cases, isolated cases, where you have people who have been afforded the opportunity to get some type of visa, and in some instances have even transitioned over to citizenship, and in other cases you see people being kicked out and shipped around different places. So I think that's one of the bigger problems when it comes to immigration is the gray area, like you're saying.
All right. Well, now you know how both of us feel, so let's bring in this other caller and get what they think about immigration. And I'm sure there'd be an interesting thought process here. All right, who we got here?
Good afternoon. It's Dr. Beasley.
Somebody
called me Dr. Beasley, and I kind of liked it, because anybody can be a doctor on BTR.
Okay.
It's the truth. But let's just look real quick at the sands of time. I believe Texas was Mexico up until 1848, right?
Right, right.
The Alamo and General Santa Ana and all of that. And California was Mexico as well up until 1860. It hasn't even been 200 years. The indigenous people of these two states are Latinos, are Mexicans. They are Mexicans. When you said the official from Texas said that the influx of undocumented people from Mexico is much less is like what happened after Katrina, I mean, that's such an obviously racially biased statement, because the people that came from Katrina were U.S. citizens.
My point is that, thank you for saying
okay,
that.
We're United States citizens who were faced with the huge, you know, environment, a catastrophe, you know, the big huge storm. It's almost like he's saying, yeah, we welcome people here in Texas as long as you're not black or Latino, as long as you're not black or Spanish. But I think people should keep that in mind. Now, there may be some issues. You know, and I'm from Los Angeles. I've seen more illegal immigrants and have been around more illegal immigrants than most of us. There may be some issues, but these people are here for a reason, and that's to work. And they do the work that most other people don't want to do. And the majority of them come here and work. And that's about what I wanted to add to it.
Well, thank you, sir, and I'm glad you did bring up that point about Katrina and the way the analogy he made, because I was thinking that same thing. It slipped my mind as I was thinking. But
those
I'm glad
Americans. He's comparing, in his eyes, an American citizen that's black is no different than someone from a foreign country. He equated the two.
Yeah,
and of course, if he were on the line and you were to say that that's what he did, he would deny it like so many other people do when I catch them in the things that they say. Oh, I didn't say that. They do that all the time. You sit there and listen to them, and then you question them of what they say, and they deny what they said it 3 minutes after they said it. They do it all the time.
Wow. And you know what, though? Here's the thing. And right now, Arizona Arizona and the Border Patrol in South Texas are kind of at odds with each other, because Arizona is saying what they're doing in South Texas is busing them and flying them into Arizona. We're basically flying them into Arizona and dropping them off at the bus station and just letting them go from there. And, you know, the governor in Arizona, she said, no, we're not having that. So it's like a little, you know, back and forth with them also on this thing. But it's just
one
crazy.
One other point I wanted to make.
Uh-huh.
The statistics show that since the downturn of 2008, that there have been more people leaving. There have been more undocumented people leaving and going back to Mexico and Central America because it's gotten too hard to even make it here.
Imagine that.
That the economy's gotten that bad that there are more people leaving.
Well,
also, there's the political implications. You have people that straddle the fence or that don't want to alienate Latino voters. And the majority of Latino voters, you know, support the rights of the undocumented people that are here. Not all. I've been in a barbershop and have heard Latino people speak and have heard ones that have been here and came here what they call the right way. I hear them talk down on the other people.
Wow. Well, you know what?
There's divisions amongst Latinos. I've heard them talk down real bad.
Of course. You know, because
right. Yeah, that's true.
A lot of them feel that they're not Latino. They're actually a part of the Anglo-Saxon race, you know what I mean? And they live their lives that way. So, yeah, it's a lot.
Well, they've assimilated. And they are ethnically what you would call Caucasian, but what makes them Latino is that they speak Spanish.
Well, does it really? or would it be they have some type of heritage? I don't know. Just speaking Spanish doesn't make you Latino.
Yes, it does.
Really? So we got...
speaking Spanish is your native language, you could be qualified as a Latino. Yes.
Okay. Okay, if it's your native language.
It's a very broad thing, a Latino. Right.
No, I'm trying to get you to clarify that because I don't want people to think so just because they learn Spanish in school, they're Latino all of a sudden, you know.
Well, if that yeah. were the case, I'd be a Latino because I learned Spanish in school.
There you go. See?
Yeah, so right. And yeah, there are, and when someone is a Latino, they can be of mestizo, which is like an Indian and Spanish mix or Indian and white mix, which the majority of Mexicans are. I've been on vacation in Mexico and have seen Mexico, and there's a big group of Mexicans, probably about 10% of the population or maybe less, and they're the ruling class. They have blonde hair and blue eyes that you can't tell them apart from any other white person here in the U.S. And they make a habit of not mixing outside of their group.
You know,
and then if you've ever been to Veracruz, Veracruz is where the slave Veracruz, Mexico. It's on the east coast of Mexico. I've been there, and that's where the slave ships landed. And there are some very, 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 very dark Mexicans there, darker than me.
One of the things I was just going to say is that one of the things I heard of, I've come across, was a thing called racial whitening. And I wonder how that played, how that factored in. I know this term whitening was considered an ideology that was pretty much widely accepted, in particular in Brazil, I believe between 1889 and I want to say 1914. And it was considered to be a solution for what they called at that time the Negro problem. And so supporters of the whitening ideology believe that the Negro race would advance culturally and genetically or even disappear totally within several generations of mixed breeding, which people, you know, when we talk about things, the whitening is something that we often overlook. Now, this mixed breeding between whites and blacks, this particular ideology, it gained its support from two specific scientific racial beliefs that were prominent during that time. And those were social Darwinism, which applied Darwin's theory of natural selection to a society of race, and the other being Aryanism, the belief that the white Aryan race was superior to all other cultures. By combining these two ideas, I believe the elites, the white elites of that particular time, believed that because white blood was superior, it would inevitably whiten the inferior race's blood.
I don't know. It seems like you got some real scientific theories for people just getting together and having sex. Because
all right.
Because that's all that really happened, is that people got together and had sex with one another. That's all that happened. And it happened. Yeah. It happened. Look at Cuba. Look at Puerto Rico. Even Mexico. Mexico, the majority of the people are mestizo, which is a mix of, you know, indigenous Indian people and white folks. Brazil, which had more slave ships landed in Brazil than anywhere else. And the majority of the people there are of a mixed, you know, they're a mixed race. Puerto Rico's the same way. But they're still white Brazilians and they're still black Brazilians. So, you know, absolutely.
Yeah, they call them Afro.
I know you say that facetiously,
I think it's, what is it, Afro something, the term.
You know what I call them, Cloud?
What's that?
I call them people.
True.
Everyone that you're talking about, I just call them people. But.
Uh-huh. Speaking of people, a person got thrown out of office last night, Mr. Cantor himself, and a lot of them are saying that he got voted out because he was one of the few Republicans that was willing to work with the Democrats on certain items, and they didn't like that, so he wasn't conservative enough, so they voted him out. What you think about that? You think that's a true statement or what? Is that a big blow?
Yeah, he's a majority leader of the House. That's a big position. He's a high profile person, and they took him out. What state is he from?
Virginia? No, is it Virginia? I think so.
I'm not sure. Virginia or South Carolina? I'm not sure. But no, I know that's a big victory for the Tea Party. That shows that they're tired of whatever he was doing. They say the issue was immigration. You know why this immigration issue was picked up steam in other places outside of? Because if you've been in Texas for a while, it's been an issue forever.
Yeah, that's true.
In California, the same way, and Arizona, and New Mexico, and the other states. It's because a lot of those people moved into Nebraska, moved everywhere else. So you have places where Latin, where Spanish people, Mexicans really didn't exist, and now they're there in full. I had a cleaning lady like 10 years ago, and we would talk. And she says, well, you know, I'm going to have to quit. I said, oh, wow, that's too bad. I said, what's the matter? I'm not giving you enough? She said, no, we're moving to Nebraska. I'm like, what?
Wow.
They left from Los Angeles and moved to Nebraska, loaded up the truck.
All right.
And moved to Nebraska. And I think that's part of the issue. I think that's part of the issue. You know what? If undocumented people are a drain on the budget from, you know, attending school and health care needs, and you know, they're not gonna deny anyone. An undocumented person can show up to the welfare office and get WIC and get food stamps for their kids. So I mean, people are concerned about that, and you know, I guess they've got a valid point, particularly when you've got budgets and problem. But
you know what?
It's not a simple thing. It's a complicated thing.
Well, go on and put it out there. It's a political thing. That's what it is. A political thing.
Well,
you know?
It's political. It's a social thing. Starting to sound like Mike, forgive me, but it's a social thing. I mean, which of us would want a child in this country to walk around with a communicable disease, or to be dying of all the things that someone can die from at a young age by not getting medical care?
Well,
if an undocumented worker goes to a county office, okay. Let's just say Los Angeles County, and goes into a county office, and they have gonorrhea or syphilis or whooping cough or tuberculosis, okay, which can spread among society. Should they not be treated because they're undocumented or illegal, as some people would say? And I don't think anybody's illegal. How can someone be illegal here in the world? We're all here by the grace of our mother and father and God. How can someone be an illegal person?
Well, you know, that's one of them terms that's used to help demoralize and make you believe and make you think that you don't belong. That's all it is.
Yeah,
and
I understand that. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I'm through.
Now, I understand that there's problems some of these people may be a drain. The majority of them work and come here to work. I used to take the train at 5:30 in the morning to get to work at 6. Who do you think would be on the train? And the bus was stopping. It would be all Latin people going to work. All probably undocumented folks.
You are so right. So right. You know, and you know, I don't know. You know, it's just hopefully they get something done about it. You know, I don't know
what they're going to get done. I don't know what they're going to get done. I don't think they will.
Well, you know, not now. A lot of them feel like the immigration bill that they were working on is completely dead now. Well, you know. And,
look
but,
what happens to almost any bill with this Congress and this administration. Nothing gets through. He's doing everything by executive order now. He's not even trying to deal with them anymore.
Right.
They've made it so difficult for him to put anything through. And anything that does get put through, it has so much other stuff added on to it.
Right, right. You know what? I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, I listen to them damn hypocrites now about the prisoner swap. I say, wait a minute. You know, doing a little research, I found out George Bush did a prisoner swap, and a lot of these same jokers were in the office, and they ain't have nothing to say about that. You know what I mean? And I'm like, why? You know, why y'all trying to act like y'all don't know what happened? Because y'all, they tried to do a one in 2010 or 2011, 12, something like that. And it was a go until they wanted to add some on the back end sanctions against Iran, you know, and it fell apart. So I can't lie. I don't blame the president for doing what he did this time. You know, bring our soldier home. You know, let them get, look, it's like this. You ain't going to stop them people, whether those five are here in Guantanamo or whatever. You're not going to stop them people over there for doing what they want to do. You know, and Dan Fasting was on one of the talk shows this weekend talking about, well, we're afraid that the Taliban is going to take over. Well, duh. We told you that when we went over there. Once we leave, that was going to happen. And you didn't help none because you announced when we were leaving. So all they did was sit and wait patiently. And now that we've so-called removed all our combat troops, they're going to do what they wanted to do, you know. And I just look at them, and they just sit up here with such a straight face and just lie and be hypocritical about some. You know, I'm like, golly, y'all, you know. And I bring this up because you mentioned this Congress and the president and the administration. And, you know, with that, looking at that type of history they have, I can't say I blame that man. Just going to do what I need to do, bring my soldier home, and, you know, deal with the aftermath when it comes. You know, because right now it's just a bunch of hypocrites sitting up there. And like I told a guy in the gym this morning, need to vote all their behinds out. Just get them all out, you know. You know, and I found out something else doing a little research. Do you know a lot of those jokers are collecting their pension while they up in the Senate? Along with that, they collecting their pensions. Now, most people can't collect them until they're 62, 65, you know, 70 for some of them under a new law. But they collecting theirs at 55, 50, you know. On top of that, so they double dipping. I say, you know what? They just crooks. That's just, I'm going to say it. They are just crooks.
Double dipping. Sometimes they're triple dipping. You could have a pension from a company. You can have your salary as a congressman. You can also be getting your military pension as well.
Right, right. You know,
and
so,
after a certain age, they're eligible for Social Security.
You know, that's
how
just right.
Millionaires, you know how many millionaires collect Social Security benefits?
Probably over 90% of them.
Well, I don't know about 90%, but there's a whole lot. There's a whole lot that are people that are, you know, steadily getting that $400, $500, $600, $700, $800, $900 a month, whatever it is they get. So,
You know, it's funny. Yesterday we talked about residual income and supplemental income. Man, they got both. They got it covered both ways.
But on the other hand, you know, it's hard to fault somebody for getting what they've worked for, getting their just due. So,
okay, come on.
Like most things, if you take a step back and look at it objectively. There's no clear-cut right or wrong. There's factors that weigh on both sides.
Okay.
But that's for those of us that try to take a step back and look at things objectively.
You're so politically correct, Beasley, and I love that about you today. You're being so politically astute.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe the things they say about me when you hear the things I say, right? I'm like, who are you guys talking about?
Okay. Oh, Lord.
Yeah. I'm about as level-headed and open-minded as they come.
At any rate. H2O said that's because you're the only person I'm talking to.
He tell him the number is 347-838-8622, and his voice is always welcome.
Yeah, you know, that Regina King is fine. You know that. But anyway, okay, Hakeem, you ready, man? You ready? We're going to get into
what. I second that motion, too.
Okay. All right. Wealth creation.
All the way back to poetic justice. I'm sorry.
Oh, wow. I got to go back to 227.
227? Yeah. I wasn't there yet. I wasn't there yet with that idea. I wasn't in agreement yet.
All right. I have some foresight then. All right. Anyway, man, let's get on your topic. You know, you wanted to bring this out, so let's go.
Okay. So first, let's get a sense of the capital universe, so to speak, of the United States, and what it looks like. And I would say we have to understand the United States as a remarkably wealthy country, that our total capital asset base is about $150 trillion. To put that in perspective, our gross national product each year is about $15 trillion. So it's about 10 times larger than that. So the household and nonprofit portion in 2010, but mostly households, the household category makes up about half of this. So the top slice of tangible assets is mostly housing, but it also includes things like cars and equipment. And it makes a little over $20 trillion. The bottom slice at about $8 trillion is like banks, credit unions, and strips. Those are all sources of short-term capital. So then on the top of that is a long-term capital, which roughly speaking, we'll call securities. So the context for securities here in this category includes stocks, bonds, mutual funds, pension funds, and insurance funds, and that totals about $30 trillion. So, and I think these numbers give us a sense of understanding where Americans have their money right now. So I think one point is that banks are about a quarter of the size of the long-term savings and securities. So even if a move your money, so to speak, campaign were successful, it wouldn't really make a huge difference in the large universe of capital. The other thing that I think is important is that housing is really one of the most important places where people have their wealth, and it's for this reason I believe that any discussion of local investment, it must include thinking about how to get more people to own their house, apartment, or co-op in order to localize some of that wealth. Now, let's talk about some of the current investment strategies. This is the moment when we do a little self-reflection, and take ownership of our contribution. You know, we are responsible, for the fact that global companies are tremendously, and I do mean tremendously, over-funded. You know, one question that can be asked, and it's often asked, is how many of us have done some form of local purchasing in the last week? And typically almost every hand might go up. When the next question is asked, how many of you do, your banking at local credit unions or banks, most hands might also go up again. Now, when the final question is asked, could we be those of us who have pension funds, out of those people, how many of us have funds invested in a local small business? Typically, all hands would go down in that case. Which leads me to this, and I'm going to stop for the moment. This is usually an important moment of revolution, you know, especially considering that half of the U.S. economy is either small or medium steel business. So, in fact, you know, if you include the informal economy where you include home-based businesses, the local economy would be significantly larger. But let's just call it half the economy to be conservative. Roughly speaking, half of our long-term investment should be going into the economy that is small and local, and right now almost nothing is. So in my mind, what that shows is an enormous overinvestment that we are making in bigger companies and an underinvestment that we are, you know, pretty much making in local small businesses. So I think it's important to think of this as one of many kinds of mutations from the law that have created an unfair advantage for non-local businesses. And the reason for this is that it really comes down to security laws, because when security laws were initially enacted in and around the Great Depression, it created a system of investment apartheid. And that system is basically, if you are in the top 1% of income and wealth, give or take, you are allowed to invest in anything, anywhere, without any question. And if you are in the other 99%, you actually have a difficult time investing in anything legally until the business in which you are going to invest does a whole list of disclosures. And these disclosures are complicated, and they can easily cost $10,000, $25,000, $50,000, maybe even $100,000, depending upon the details of all of it. And the result of the high cost of disclosure is that there has been very little money in the securities category that has flowed into local small businesses. So if we were to get the capital market to operate efficiently, roughly speaking, there would be a transfer of $15 trillion of long-term capital from global business to local business. But to put that into perspective, and that works out to about $50,000 per capita. So you can do the math for your own community about what the level of new capital coming in really looks like, but it's quite significant. So I'm going to step back for a second, but when I hop back in, I would like to in the remaining time just review some of the options, and I think I have about seven of them for how we can do some degree of local investing right now. And all of these things are legally well established.
Whoa, okay. All right, you know what? And I understand everything you were saying, but, you know, in some instances, I have to use where I'm at as an example. You know, there's, you know, even though this is a little, they call themselves a city, but, you know, it's basically, you have those certain individuals, you know, that have all the property and all the money in the city. And any type of business that comes through, you know, 9 times out of 10 have to go through them from approval. So now that's where you get into the corruption, because you got to grease their palms for them to say yay or nay. And I'm kind of stopped up right about now. But, you know, you have so many businesses, especially small businesses, that can start and survive. Except for you have individuals like that, you know, if you're not benefiting them, it's just not going to happen. Now, as far as the black community, you know, there's not a black grocery store. There's not even a black convenience store anywhere in this city that I know of. I'll be honest with you. The Philippines got a little grocery store. The Koreans got a big grocery store. You know, but we don't have no grocery store because we're too busy frequenting them. So, you know, and it's not that they are, I'm not going to say they can't do it, because they can, but no one is really trying because we're too busy supporting other people. You know, and plus moving outside our own communities. And once we move out, we take our money with us. So, I don't know what is the answer to this. You know, what can we do to rectify this type of behavior?
Okay, I'm sorry. Was somebody getting ready to say something?
No. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna start to. It's obviously a level of consciousness, and to be honest, it's actually already happening. I think the problem is it's on a micro scale in comparison. So many of there are many isolated stories. There are a variety of different stories we can look at and reflect on in a variety of different places. But typically, some of us find ourselves on the outside looking in because you see less of this type of forward-thinking type of mentality and this type of culture taking place in some of our neighborhoods, especially if we're in communities where that type of action isn't taking place, but where that isn't a part of that household's culture, so to speak. And there are exceptions to the rule where you have people who grew up in a household and they intentionally go in the direction of entrepreneurship. They look at the status quo education format, go to school, get a degree, get a good job. And for many of us, that just doesn't resonate with us. That's not enough. When other people are being taught, go to school, learn a skill, and bring that skill back to a business and start it and create wealth and help create wealth in your community amongst your peers and your and those who are like you, like-minded and whatnot. So I think there's a shifting of a paradigm taking place. There's a level of consciousness being raised, and it's just a matter of tapping into what's happening and stirring up in places where it isn't happening, stirring that type of attitude up in places where it may not exist. I mean, you could look at places like Mississippi. I think particularly it might be Jackson. I'm not sure. But they have a powerful movement taking place right there. And particularly the South, you look at the South, many of our communities in the South are more entrepreneurial oriented, and I don't know if it's because of the whole Booker T. Washington influence of yesteryear, but there's definitely a lot of people who have that type of mentality, in my opinion. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I mean, you putting out some good information. So continue on. Let's Beasley has something to say.
I'm listening. I chime in when I feel the time is right.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he's quoting stats. I mean, it's hard to argue with those.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. All right. Continue on, Hakeem. You got my message. So.
Okay. So I want to look at one of the options because earlier, I was talking about seven items of the established, legally well-established concepts and models that are working right now. So I just want to reflect on this shortly. So for the first one is one that I'm sure many are familiar with already, and it's called specialty CDs. Now, what you'll notice is that some people have approached their banks or credit unions. They asked them to basically set up specialized accounts, the proceeds of which would be used to support local businesses. So a company called Equal Exchange, which is a fair trade company in Boston, where it is based, approached their local bank, Wainwright, and basically convinced them to set up a special fund that would only support Equal Exchange. So as a result, now Equal Exchange now has a $1 million line of credit, And of course, anyone who is unaccredited can do their banking and put their money in the CDs like this. Now, this is actually an interesting way that people might be able to create a new source of at least lending capital for local small businesses. A second one is co-ops, which has been a category where there has been a fair amount of local investment. You know, broadly speaking, a co-op membership is not a security, but when a co-op takes a loan from its members, that is a security. But enough templates, enough prior action is out there that many co-ops have now, now many co-ops know how to do this pretty inexpensively. And so I think this has been one way people have been able to invest locally. So Weaver Street Market is an example I have here. And Weaver Street Market is a 13,000-member consumer co-op, grocery co-op in Carver, North Carolina. That's Carver, North Carolina. They needed a third store, and they needed $1 million. So they borrowed it from their members, paying 3 to 5% on interest on that per year. There's also the third one is Lions, and or some people call it Lionizing, and which stands for the Local Opportunities Network, the Local Opportunities Network, which was started in Port Townsend, Washington. James Fraser is a former hedge fund manager. He started it, and Lions addresses a very interesting aspect of securities laws, which is that even if you have done a lot of your disclosure work, you still might only be able to approach family, friends, people you have a close pre-existing relationship with. And what Fraser does is he has a monthly party in Port Townsend where he brings together businesses and investors, and then he passes around a little list to indicate, well, you know, who do you know, and you know, have a pre-existing relationship with. So they create these newfound pre-existing relationships in the midst of this party. And this has been giving him sort of, you know, pointing the direction on how he can circulate business plans in Port Townsend. And just this one little social invention has generated about $1 million of new local investment per year in this 10,000-person community. So, you know, again, if you're thinking about that and how much local investment could you plausibly see very quickly in your community, take $1 million and then multiply that by the number of times 10,000 people exist in your population. A fourth one is on my list is municipal bonds. Now, we talked about that a little bit yesterday. And there is a long history of municipal bonds supporting economic development. And usually the worst case of economic development, you know, is when you've seen municipal bonds show up in some cases. So for example, big corporate attractions or large industrial development parks, you know, municipal bonds are attractive to many kinds of investors simply because the income from the bond is tax-free. You know, and according to a food study done in Boulder County, I believe it's in Denver, found that food bonds is highly recommended for local reinvestment in order to bring a new chunk of capital that would then collateralize loans from local banks and credit unions going to priority food businesses. So a fifth model is grassroots loan funds. Now, the law around investment companies is fairly restrictive, and it's true that if you want to find a mutual fund to do some investing in, there are 7,500 mutual funds out there, and unaccredited investors, or in layman's terms, people who aren't in the wealthy category, happily can put their money into those mutual funds. Now, the problem is that every single one of those mutual funds has chosen not to invest in local small businesses. It is not because it is illegal. You know, it is because they have made that particular choice not to invest in smaller businesses, local businesses. So, and the cost of creating a new mutual fund, to be honest, that may be a local small business friendly type of fund that we could control is very hefty. So instead, what has happened is that some groups have looked for exemptions within the Investment Company Act. Now, so far, for an example, there's a nonprofit creating a revolving loan fund for small businesses, and it's not considered an investment company. The founder and spearhead of the ECD, or as it is actually known, Economic and Community Development Institute, Steve Fireman, has a working example in Columbus, Ohio. Now, he has 14 funds. He is the local business banker, you could say, of Columbus. That's how this nonprofit operates. So of the 14 funds, he got permission. This is what he did. He got permission from Ohio's Commission's Securities Regulators to allow unaccredited investors to participate, which is also a very, very awesome concept. The sixth model that I've been looking at, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday also, is investment clubs. You know, groups of people, usually small groups of people, can come together, as we know, and they could put money into their own pool. And as long as they are all involved in decision-making of where the money goes, an investment club is another way you can do local investment and local reinvestment. Now, a great example of this is an investment club in Maine by the name of No Small Potatoes, which is an offshoot of Slow Money. And they invest in local farms and local businesses. The seventh one and the last one that I want to mention is self-directed IRAs. Now, this has long been established in the law, but remarkably, few people are aware of this, that it is legally possible to roll over money from an IRA that you have that is, you know, only invested or could be invested in very global securities. Then to put that in the hands of a custodian that you hire. And if you shop around, you could find a custodian for $200 to $300 a year. So with that self-directed IRA, you can invest in everything we just talked about. In fact, you can really invest in almost anything you know you think of, except your own home, of course, or your own business. But you could, for example, invest in your neighbor's home, and your neighbor could invest in your home. The last thing that I want to sort of point out. Was just on rates of return. I want to point out on rates of return because there is a lot of discussion that one hears, you know, even in places like Slow Money, where people say, well, with local investment, we're not going to get a market rate on return. And that whole discussion is predicated on a belief that a market rate of return is 5, 8, 10, even 12%. And an important fact, and I do this to make these these calculations in front of local dollars, local cents. The historic rate of return of Wall Street in any 12-month period since 1879, if you add dividends and remove inflation, is 2.6%. So that is the point that one must be. My argument, though, is that there are a lot of local businesses, that can beat that 2.6%. And it's our job to try to identify more of these opportunities and turn them into investable portfolios. So one thing I think about is when the first $1 trillion moves from Wall Street to Main Street, what's going to happen is that with less demand, the prices of those Wall Street securities are going to decline, and the prices of the Main Street securities are going to go up. And that's going to grab the attention of investment advisors, and the next trillion will move more quickly. So I think this market imperfection that stands in the way of local living economies may well clear out the way, you know, very quickly once we get things going, so to speak. Beasley, did you have something to add?
Well, how can you add anything to that?
you said you don't have anything to add?
Not to that, no. I'm listening.
Okay. But yeah, I did. So we, you know, we just reflected, and I want to kind of do a quick recap just to highlight all seven that was mentioned, and, you know, and see where we go from there. So the seven that I mentioned so far today, I mentioned was obviously the special CDs. We talked about co-ops. We talked about the Lions standard. We talked about municipal bonds. We talked about grassroots long funds. We talked about investment clubs, and we closed it with self-directed IRAs, which were all very, very, very cool concepts. Now, if you know, I know we have some callers on the phone, but if I will suggest to any callers, if you have some comments or some ideas you can share with us, you could press button number one. That way we can get to you, and we can listen to some of your thoughts, some of your ideas, and you guys can chime in and hop on into this discussion along with us. I know a lot of stuff is happening. Interesting stuff is going on in the chat room right now. So I know that's being handled over there. And I'm surprised, Beasley, that you didn't have any amazing stuff to give us after reflecting.
You're doing a great. I mean, you're covering everything. You're doing a great job. There's not much to add to what you're saying.
Okay, I will say this, and I'm going to ask you this because I definitely want to get your thoughts on this. Like with some of the stuff that that I mentioned so far, do you think these are like models that you believe we can use to move forward economic, you know, local economic agendas throughout of our communities, or do you think it's like one of those scenarios where it only works in particular demographics, in a particular demographic?
I mean, you know, everyone's economics is their own personal economics to start with.
Right.
And I don't, you know, I live in a community. I don't necessarily live in the black community. I don't live in the hood. You know, I support the businesses that are close by. But I don't really see, and I guess we do have some, but I don't see our common economic goals. My personal economics is not community economics. And I don't think most people's is. You know, my money is my money. What's going on in my world and my investments and whatever I'm doing is mine. I'm not even married. So, I mean, that whole community thing, it goes over my head when people speak of it so often. Usually the people that speak of, you know, pooling their resources in the community, they don't really have a lot of resources, in my experience.
Understandable.
In my experience. I mean, that's a real tender area, too. And I think most people probably feel the same way. Their checkbook is their checkbook. What they earn or don't earn is their world. I don't live in a community like that, and I wonder how many people do. I mean, let me ask you this. If your neighbor knocked on your door and told you he was behind on his rent, and that since you guys are neighbors and you've been neighbors for a little while here, you know, could you write him a check for $1,000? Could you write him a check for $1,000?
What are you saying? Could I?
Would you?
Oh, would I? Well, I would personally. I would have to assess it depending upon who, and it would definitely be dependent upon which one, because you know
it'd be a real slim chance that you're just going to write this neighbor a check for $1,000. And it also, if he were to come to you and say, "All right, take that aside," that hey, I got this great idea, this great investment idea, and all I need is $5,000 of your money. So I think people keep their money and their economic situation within their own household.
Hmm. Well, that's...
Is that part of the problem why the black community as a whole doesn't move forward collectively? Maybe. But I think most people, regardless of their ethnicity, work that way. Now, some groups don't, and it's not even all in some groups. I know for a fact that Korean people get together and they do something that is called a key. And what they'll do, say 30 people will get together, and they'll each put $1,000 in this key, in this pool, each month, okay?
Uh-huh.
And that they have a selection system where one of those people out of the 30 takes the $30,000 and starts a business with it.
Yeah.
And if you've ever if you've ever been to Los Angeles, you'll see all the Korean businesses. There's business.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to tell 438 and 314 that their lines are hot. You guys are open.
And it's also it's also frowned upon and very shameful if someone doesn't continue or doesn't meet their obligation to the key.
Yeah.
To the
group.
The
Jews does the same thing also.
Okay. And not all Jews.
Not all Jews, but the Jews that I met.
Probably lots of groups. I know the Ethiopians.
Yeah,
they pool their resources together, and they've taken over. Ethiopian Jews in Los Angeles have taken over areas that were once traditionally Jewish.
Yeah, I agree.
On Fairfax. Anybody from Los Angeles knows Fairfax up until San Vicente. It used to be an all-Jewish area. Now the Ethiopians have taken over the past 20, 30 years. So different groups do it. And there's something that binds them. And I don't know if any of you could think of 30 people that you know that you can get together and do this with.
No. I don't know much 30 people to do.
People don't think like that.
Yeah. The thing I'm listening to, it's a great show about the finance, but it has to start, and I agree with you, with the individual. We have to stop. If we're going to talk about communities and this and that, we have to focus first on the individual, asking him, do you want to be a slave for the rest of your life? That means working for somebody and realizing other people's dream, or do you want to realize your dream? Because as soon as somebody tries to have a job, that's basically telling you you're basically working hard for somebody else to basically succeed on his dream, not on your dream. That's the number one mentality. So that's the number one thing that all black people need to get back, is going back to saying to people that you go get the degrees or you go get whatever you need to, but then you need to use that degree and say, okay, I have that degree. What can I do with that degree to bring value to the community? Because the more value you bring to people, the more you'll get paid.
Most people really don't think that way. This is Stanley I'm talking to?
Yes.
Hey, Stanley, how you doing? It's Beasley.
Most
people don't think that way. You know, that's just the reality. People talk they talk in ways that people really don't think. You know, when someone goes to school and gets a degree, they don't normally attribute it to the community. They may have had some help. They may have had some help along the way from family members and relatives, and they give them some thanks. But as far as the community, no. And even in these days, a degree doesn't necessarily even equal employment.
Exactly. I agree.
I know people with MBAs that are looking for jobs.
Mm-hmm. No, I know people with the same thing like you. Same thing like you're saying.
Right.
I know people with MBAs
and
everything.
People really, and people don't think in terms of the community.
No, they think of
they don't.
Of
and you know what? And I would say it's most people. I would say what some Koreans do, not all, but what some Koreans do and what some Jewish groups do and probably what the Ethiopians do is rarer. Everyone goes for themselves. I got mine, you go get yours.
That's
the reality.
Yes,
that's the reality.
Yes, but that's
well,
what
you
I'm
know,
saying.
There's ahead. a lot of truth in that. As I've always said, all black people are not the same. But I have seen immigrants who do have focused ambitions. Someone earlier mentioned about the Koreans and their development organizations, which is very true. Asians have the same thing, well, be more specific, Chinese. And my favorite group, one of my favorite groups, the Nigerians, here have their business circles that they meet maybe twice a month. And I tell you what, I have sat in with a group of Somalis and watched them raise $35,000 in about a half hour. But is that more of the exception than the rule? Yes, it's more of the exception. Everybody don't get involved in it. And really, you don't expect that. So everybody's not going to be a business person. Just find your own birds of a feather or birds of like kind, people of like kind like you, and go ahead and do what you're going to do.
You know what I attribute that to with immigrants? Without a business, it's going to be hard for them to find a place in the workforce, particularly if you don't have the language mastered.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. Some of the professions is very difficult for even a native, a black person, to get involved into, let alone somebody. How did them Hispanics start all those construction companies out there in California, Los Angeles area, and also in Atlanta?
Because there's tons of laborers. There's tons and tons of labor. So finally someone wakes up and says, wow, I can start, someone whose paperwork is right. Hey, I can start a construction company. Hey, I can get bonded. Hey, I can hire all these guys and pay them $15 an hour. And when I'm making $30 an hour off their work. I mean, that's just the fields that people are in.
Yeah. So
and again, Hispanics, not all are immigrants, not all are undocumented. You know, there were Latinos here out here in the West or Hispanics before there were whites.
So Cloud, was that Cloud who was taking the place of Eric there for a while?
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah, no wonder the show's running very smooth. But, yeah, I think that you're trying to reach out to a too broad of a spectrum. You need to concentrate on doing things more as an individual and also bringing in other people who have like minds as you. That's the way those cartels are formed. I'm pro-cartel, pro-economic.
Even people with like minds, okay, are you going to just be able to trust everybody?
Well,
hell
there's
no.
There's a process you have to go through in order to solve that problem too, right?
It's too painful a process for me to want to undertake. I'd rather do my own thing.
I will say this, Beasley, because I definitely hear what you're saying.
I'm talking the real deal.
You go around trusting everybody with a project to invest in, or everyone that sounds nice and friendly when you've got some money and everything, and you're going to get taken advantage of. That's just the reality of the world, and it's been that way for a long time. You might have to kiss 30 frogs to find one prince or princess. It's better to be self-sufficient. And, you know, and I've had partners and things, and sometimes, and it usually worked out right. I haven't had any really, really horrible experiences. But I've had situations where I've had partners where I'm bringing in the majority of the business, a great majority of the business. And after a while, that doesn't really work out as patient and as generous as I'd like to be. The reason why you go into business is so that you can cut out the middleman between you and the money.
Well, it depends on what you want to do. I see proposals and business plans in areas like telecommunications, and people bring different expertises to that plan to put it together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not talking about no $10,000. You're talking about millions of dollars in those plans. And they work. Some of them don't. Some of them don't go no place.
Well, I don't know. I got a different philosophy. I don't buy dreams. I sell them.
Okay, it's understandable. I wanted to say this, though. I wanted to add this to it.
And I wish one of those people that talk that community stuff, I want them to call in and call in on the line, because they're I don't think most of them have any real practical hands-on experience of running any type of business. And not that I'm Joe Huge businessman, because I guess the majority of the business that I've been involved in all my life has really just been self-employed. I don't employ dozens and dozens of people. I just work myself and maybe have a couple of people with me or a few people with me and earn enough to take care and support myself and do a little extra. People that talk that, you know, I don't get it. I mean, I do get it, but I know the way people really do work in real life. And in real life, everyone generally keeps their finances. Their finances are their finances.
So I just wanted
now,
to say...
Now, I would wish someone could call in and prove me wrong.
I didn't want to keep interrupting you.
No, I'd want someone to call in and prove that wrong.
Oh, yeah, so for anyone... Oh, I'm sorry. For anyone that's listening, if you want to, like Beasley said, if you wanted to add on to the discussion, the call-in number is 347-838-8622. That, again, is 347-838-8622, and just press button number 1 when you're in the phone, in the queue, and we'll make sure your mic is hot and you can contribute and chime in with us. I'll continue.
And in the same respect, I'm not saying that black folks as a whole wouldn't be better off if we thought differently, but I'm telling you, it's not just black people that think like this. Not everybody's getting together and pooling their money and working for the greater good of the group. People are like islands for the most part. You might have people that you do business with that you make money with, but it's not like it's just their group is open to everybody. Just because you're Jewish, or just because you're Korean, or just because you're white, or just because you're whatever your group is. People keep their finances, for the most part, to themselves. Are there advantages, like the way the Koreans use the key? Yeah, there's advantages. If you can get a load, if you can get... you know, $30,000 at one time to start something up. And even
well,
then...
Well, it does happen. Read Amos Wilson's Blueprint of the Black Power. He has numerous instances in there where you do have groups from different ethnic backgrounds, more than one. And funny thing about it, he talks about the Koreans that do just what cloud is, you know, proposing. As I said before, you just got to be around those people. You got to look up, search for them, and go on and do your thing. I tell you another book that talks about them too, Tribes by Jule Coakland, T-R-I-B-E-S. Talks about different ethnic groups, talks about different people who have came together and done just that. Another book, Fortune at the Bottom of the Pyramid. Hang on. Fortune at the Bottom of the Pyramid by C.K. Prakhalad, P-R-A-H-A-L-A-D. Talks about the same thing. Mentions many groups that do the same thing.
It, you know what? It can work if you've got the right people.
In New York, Lowell Hawthorne, who owns Golden Crust, which is a $100 million business, a Jamaican-American. Him and his family came here, and they had good jobs.
Oh, yeah.
Working for the New York Police Department. And they quit, put their money together, started Golden Crust. And as I said before, you know, as reported on, matter of fact, it was Armstrong Williams, they interviewed him. His revenue was $100 million, I think, a couple of years ago. And that's a family business.
Yeah, so there are people that are doing it. And I'm positive that there are.
There's another brother by the name of Ramzu Yunus, Y-U-N-U-S, Ramzu, R-A-M-Z-U. He wrote a book called Prisons to President. Talks about how out of prison he ends up in Zimbabwe doing big business and sitting down with presidents. So it does happen. You just got to make up your mind. That's what you want to do.
Well, maybe it's from where I'm from and the slick nature of folks. Los Angeles doesn't exactly have Midwest values.
We call it this book written about the cable business in Los Angeles. What is it called? The Anatomy of a Hustle. Cable comes to South Central.
That sounds more like Los Angeles, Anatomy of a Hustle.
Yeah.
Los Angeles. And I think I think living here all these years is the reason why I have the viewpoints that I do.
Cable comes to South Central, written by Clinton E. Galloway.
Now that sounds like something I want to read. All of them sound good, all the books that you mentioned, but this one sounds particularly good.
It talks about how even the judges were crooked and this whole adventure. See if I can come up with some names here.
Yeah.
So,
oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No,
sorry. Go ahead.
No, that was it.
I was just gonna piggyback on that and say in the tech scope of things, you know, I know we have a lot of different things to say about technology as a whole, but there's definitely a huge movement in the what they call the shareable community, or they call it it used to be part just the green movement, but it's kind of sprouting into a variety of different things. So you see stuff like peer-to-peer lending, and you got micro lending, and you have things like crowdfunding, for example. And typically when people are dealing with crowdfunding, it's often a bunch of people that they know in collaboration with some people that they, you know, they don't know, who just contribute and put money in the pot, and they just invest in somebody's idea. And it's been so successful that they've also evolved and brought on an equity-based version of crowdfunding, which is really an old method, but, you know, technology is just taking it to another level. And so people can invest and you know, buy into equity
it's a security. You can do a security investment with some of these startups who try to formulate a business using those types of platform. The only problem is at this particular moment, you have to have accredited. So you have to pretty much be in a specific financial bracket. You got to be in a certain tax bracket to benefit from it right now, unfortunately. But they're still working on legislation, and hopefully they'll get some legislation to go through that will allow, you know, people to, you know, whether you're a creditor or not, to be able to invest and gain equity into a lot of these different startups, which would open up a huge door for, you know, people who want to start, whether it's you want to cook up some sauce out your kitchen, start a catering company, a new barbecue company, you want to, start a limo service, whatever it is, an incubator, so on, you need capital. And so sometimes people have ideas, and like one of those guys whose story we told from Townsend, Washington, you know, what he did is started having these parties, and he found a loophole. He found a loophole to the security law and found out, okay, I'm going to create an atmosphere where people will actually be able to prove that they have a relationship, so that if it comes up, when it comes to checking their books or auditing, they'll have, you know, they've recorded this record. And so he basically created this vehicle where people could raise capital using stuff that people do all the time, party. And, you know, he used his party to bring in people to find people who had means and influence and bring them together with people who had ideas and business ideas, and they had their business plans, so he could circulate those plans. And it's turned into a nice investment opportunity for him, and he's become a mediator for local investment using that, something as simple as that.
You know, if I could say something, and Mr. Beasley, since you out there in California, this is a case where you had Bradley. I know these names are familiar with you.
I just bought the book. But go ahead. I just bought the
Bradley,
book on
Johnny
Amazon
Cochran,
for $3.87.
Judge Consuelo Marshall, female black judge.
Consuelo Marshall, she's a federal judge, I think.
She used to work for Johnny Cochran.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy that brought this case to court, Johnny Cochran was representing the other side, and this one group of black men, of course, they wanted to bring cable to South Central.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's the point. If this judge, Consuelo Marshall, was used to work for Johnny Cochran, she was supposed to recuse herself from the case because there's a conflict of interest there. And what she ended up doing was dismissing. Plus, she dismissed with prejudice, saying that as if they couldn't bring it back again.
Right.
So get that book and read that. That is totally crazy. You got black folks screwing other black folks, which at that level, which goes on all the time.
What else is new? What else is new? You can buy that book on Amazon. I just bought it in very good used condition for $3.78. It's going to cost me more to ship it to me, but this is an interesting story. It's an indictment.
Yeah.
It's an indictment of the system, the larger system. These guys, it was two brothers. One was an accountant, one was a doctor, so two professionals decided they wanted to do something for the community. This is in 1979. They wanted to help the blight with the latest technology or the newer technology, which was cable television, or that wasn't in the area, and it looks like they had difficulties all along the way. And that's another force that's working against you from the grassroots, is that you already have groups of money that are piled up that influence politicians, and they make it difficult to do things. But I'm looking forward to reading this. And thanks for telling me about this book.
Oh,
I think I'm so cynical from it's because of where I'm from. I've seen hustlers and scamsters do their thing. It's almost the nature of the whole area, and it transcends black folks. It is what it is. I'd rather go for my own.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. It does transcend black folks. I've always said, if you ever had a revolution, the first people you'd have to go burn down their house look just like you, really. But it's very difficult to find good friends that you can trust. I mean, that is your name. The fact that people can trust your name is, and there's a parable about that, is very, very important.
I've done business with friends and they've been very open and cool with them. And for whatever reason, after a while, you guys really aren't friends anymore. Kind of just drifts away. It may not be any real bad blood. And maybe part of it's the way that I acted, since I'm the one writing the checks and the one in control and being younger and a bit abrasive. But, you know, money and friendship most of the time don't work too well together. But then again, who would you want to go into business with? Or who would you want to do something with? It would be with someone that you trust. Someone that you have some trust. Now, none of them really rip me off or anything. But when money gets involved, people and things change. You should watch the movie The Treasure of Sierra Madre. It's about a group of broke, poor gold miners out there around the gold rush time, searching for gold, and everybody was the best of pals. About a group of about six or seven of them. As soon as they started finding gold, after searching for it for so long, they started killing each other off. Couldn't trust each other. It's a perfect example.
I think another cool example was the Apple story with Steve Jobs. In my opinion, was a pretty interesting story that was.
And they've had issues with each other.
Yeah,
Steve Jobs
yeah,
had
I mean.
Issues. Even the Microsoft story.
Yeah.
That guy Paul Allen, when he tells the truth about Bill Gates, it's not so nice.
True.
They've had falling outs. They started off in a garage.
You know, that's funny. I knew a white kid, well, a friend I worked with, his son was making computer wafers in his garage, getting burnt up with the chemicals and everything. And that was back about in maybe 1970. A lot of things started in the garage. Stepbrother Iron and Steel, he started in the garage. I mean, a lot of things do start in the garage.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is you could start with someone, and you and I started something, and say we both had nothing. When money gets involved, it changes the whole equation. But I guess it all works out for the best if you start a company like Microsoft or Apple, and it does so well. But even on a smaller scale, and those guys had issues with each other that I doubt that they're still friends. And at the end of the day, I mean, money's going to come and money's going to go, but the people that you establish a friendship with, a real friendship where you're like brothers, you miss that more than you miss, whatever caused you to move you apart from those people.
I'm sure you've experienced that,
Pianki, if you've ever had a partner in anything, or you did things mostly as your own, as you're the owner.
I had partners. We done jobs together. We split the expenses, split the profits. No, how do we do that? Yeah, something like that.
But have you had situations like what I'm talking about?
No.
Where you've gone into a venture and you're
no longer...
I wouldn't
get involved.
Pardon?
No, I have.
I wouldn't get involved.
No, I'm talking about...
I've had people... Of course, we've all probably... But I've had people want to do something, but I read through it and said, no, I'm not interested.
Okay. All right. So you use your discernment. Not everybody is worth partnering up with. Well, you know,
I never had a lawyer until I got rid of clothes. I had an accountant. So if you can run a business without having to have a lawyer, I think you've done pretty good.
Yeah, I've never had a lawyer draw anything up. I probably would now. I've got people that I have a wholesaler that I have a relationship with now. Everything's done on a handshake, and there's a lot of money involved sometimes. And I wouldn't dare do anything to mess up that relationship. It's a value to both of us. And probably more so to me than it is to him.
Well, you ever get a chance, get that book called Baker's Son, too, by Laura Hawthorne. That was a very good story about that Jamaican. You know, he was Baker's son. B-A-K, like Baker, like Cake Baker.
Okay.
You know those little meat pies, those cuisine that's very popular among Caribbean.
My mother used to make them. They're delicious.
He had, he was getting those patties made. He was getting those patties from another outlet. Matter of fact, it was a white outlet. And I think he was getting like $5,000 a week from them. And his business was booming. He was getting ready to expand and everything. And all of a sudden, this company said, well, we can't provide you with that many no more. We can only provide you with half. And that would have killed his business.
Oh, this is the Golden Crust Company.
Yeah. Well, guess what he done? He goes all the way back down into Jamaica. And the crust and something else was special, you know. It wasn't just something you can just go buy off the shelf. You had to go all the way back down to Jamaica in the forest.
Get the ingredients.
And find a person who was astute on making exactly what he had to have. He brought him back up here to the States and kept on without missing a beat. That was a very good story. He even had a stroke and worked his way through that and came back and kept on moving. He had to go down in Florida and buy the name Golden Crush from a white couple.
He liked the name that much.
Oh, it was popular. And the white couple had a patent on it. I think they had a copyright on the name, and he went and bought it out from under, unsuspectedly.
Mm-hmm.
And
they probably weren't using it. It was probably dormant. I just bought that book, and anyone else can, too. There's still more copies. I just bought that book for a penny. It costs more to ship it. It costs $3.99 to ship. I wonder if I can get them all shipped together. I just bought that book for a penny on Amazon. And these are recent books. Both of these books that you mentioned, or the ones that I purchased, Anatomy of a Hustle, Cable Comes to South Central, and The Baker's Son, they were both printed in 2012. So this is pretty relevant information. And eventually I'll get around to reading them. But I'll read the South Central one probably sooner. And that's all a good thing, because I'm sure these guys had all kinds of obstacles to go through. And
111, your mic is hot.
Well, I guess that's me. Hello, Beasley.
Hello. Oh, AJ.
You're a very well-read individual.
Well, all you got, if you know how to read, you may as well take advantage of it.
That's what I always say. I use my eyeballs, too. So explain this wealth redistribution. It's a word that makes me recoil a bit.
I don't know too much about wealth redistribution.
No, I'm talking about the whoever was doing this presentation. I see the word in Eric's chat, redistribution. That means taking from somebody else and giving it to, funneling it to somebody else. It makes me a little queasy.
Doesn't necessarily mean take. Wealth can be redistributed all kinds of ways.
When government does it, it's usually taking.
Do you think that's what's happening now?
I don't know. Oh, you mean in America?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How so?
Well, government has all sorts of ways to force people to move their money around. The tax system itself is a form of wealth redistribution. Takes it from you and gives it to somebody else. You don't even know where it goes.
Well, you don't have any say-so over where it goes, that's for sure.
Well, but you don't know where it goes. I don't think anybody on this call knows.
Well, they put a budget out.
Well, see, that's the thing that gets me. Do you think that, Eric, you don't mind if I take this conversation a little bit off the path, do you?
Well, time will definitely be short on curtailing, especially if it leads into a moment of confusion.
Oh no, I dislike confusion as much as wealth redistribution. But if you think about it, when Congress comes up with a budget, they don't know how much you're going to make, so they don't know how much you're going to pay next year to the IRS. So how do they come up with a budget not knowing how successful you're going to be? Maybe you're not going to be successful. Seems like a strange way to run a business. You got a business, you put out a budget, but you have no clue what's going to come in. You don't know if anybody's going to buy anything. You don't know what the demographics are. You're sort of, it's just a wish list.
That's true. They run huge deficits.
Plus, they come up with taxes like Obamacare, or better known as Affordable Health Act. You know, one thing, they signed up 19 million people who didn't have insurance. But how do these poor people pay the deductible? Some of these deductibles is $4,000 and $6,000 before they can even start using the insurance.
Well, you know what they're hoping? Helping they don't get sick. And then they're going to end up owing money to whatever hospital it is that they show up at, which is no different than the system that was in place before.
It is what it is.
Called walking into the emergency room.
But speak further about redistribution of wealth, because I don't see it.
Well,
I see that though. I'm seeing those at the very top.
Well, they don't usually redistribute the wealth from the people at the top. They're immune.
There's a lot of programs that
usually the people at the bottom that get screwed.
There's a lot of programs that redistribute. I ain't gonna say it's wealth, but hey, look at food stamps.
Well, money.
That benefits the agriculture industry. What giant agribusinesses wasn't getting in subsidies and
Do you approach the issue of money itself? Because none of you have any. You got.
I do.
You got Federal Reserve notes. You
sitting
on gold?
Oh, I'm in the money business.
Are you sitting on gold?
Yeah, I got some of that.
Because that's money.
Not no gold certificates.
I understand that world well.
I'm just saying that's money. Look, I have a whole bunch of dollar bills in various denominations from various years. I bought it off of QVC a long time ago. It's probably worth a lot more than I paid for it back then. Probably wasn't a good deal when I bought it, but it was an impulse buy. But there's a lot of interesting things written on these bills. You ever looked at some of these old bills?
Yep. In fact, I've got a couple on my desk, silver certificates.
Well, not even the silver certificates. I have a Federal Reserve note. Let's find it. I'll read it to you. It's got a very interesting message on it. And it's from, I think, 1955. It's a $10 bill. Here's what it says. This is a 1950 $10 bill, Federal Reserve note. It's not a silver certificate, but here's what it says. This note is legal tender for all debts, public and private, and is redeemable in lawful money at the United States Treasury or any Federal Reserve bank. So I got to ask the question, if this is redeemable in lawful money, is this $10 bill money, and is it lawful?
It's lawful. It's basically a check.
But it's not money. Because if
no.
I was going to get lawful money.
No, money by definition, or a dollar by definition, is X amount of grains of silver.
You're exactly right. Smart man.
Well, gold and silver is real money and always has been.
But this $10 bill doesn't say gold or silver anywhere on it. It says I'm going to get lawful money. What do you suppose in 1950 I would have gotten if I'd have gone to a bank or a Federal Reserve bank and said, give me my lawful money?
No one probably would do that, but you would get X amount of dollars of gold or silver.
They would have gave you 40 quarters or two $5 bills.
Well, you know, even then, the coinage that was made was not the silver coinage that was made was 90% silver. So at that time, it was actual money. That was up until 1963.
Silver dimes too, right?
Right. And
so that's probably what they were meaning.
Well, yeah, the actual gold or silver. In 1964, it turned into something else where it was 40%. Now there's no precious metal, silver or gold, in any of the coinage.
Yeah, what did they do with it all?
They've reached the secondary market because the face value is worth quite a bit more than the face value.
You got people that's buying up old pennies that had copper in them because they're betting, hedging that the penny will become obsolete and they can melt it down and have more copper value than the penny.
That's cumbersome, but it's true. The old wheat line pennies were actually of a higher, and I forget when they changed the year on those. I don't deal in those, but a silver dollar in any type of condition, whether it be a Morgan or a Peace dollar, wholesales, there's a premium on those. They wholesale for like $24 each.
A nipple had real nipple in it.
That's 20. Don't ask me any questions like that on the air,
right,
if you don't mind.
All right. No philately or anything like that?
I'm just a guy that reads.
Okay. Did a nickel have real nickel in it?
I don't think
no.
so.
They nickels were silver were, nickels.
They actually were made of silver,
they're
too.
They're very hard to find these days. Can't find them.
They're around. You'd have to go to a coin dealer to buy them, and they're going to cost you more than 5 cents. They're going to cost you roughly 50, 70 cents for a nickel, for a 90% silver nickel.
I'm saying it's hard to go. It's hard to go out and get a bunch of dollars, the old dollars, and find any silver in them.
No.
Well, what you got to do is get you a metal detector and walk along the riverbank, and the first big giant tree you see, go search around the base of that tree.
Why? Is that a money tree?
You might find a hoard of coins that was buried there, and that tree being just what it is a landmark.
You got a better chance doing like when we were doing kids and take one of those medical detectors and find people's rings on the beach.
We had a guy here who cut down a tree, and he was digging up the stump and dug into a big old bag of coins, man.
What about the couple in Northern California that found the cans on their property with pristine coins? In fact, they're up for auction now. One of them sold for over $1 million, one $20 gold piece, because it was particularly rare because it didn't have the "In God We Trust" motto. That was in the news lately.
Yes,
that was in the news, and it lets
you
know
what. I've been rumored to read two pieces.
Well, no, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. I mean, some people
I recommend
don't even,
it.
Some people don't even bother. Members of the Empty.
Some people get their information from Blog Talk Radio.
That's shameful unless you're listening to someone that likes to speak in facts.
Yes, factually.
Because you can't create facts. But a $20 gold, a $20 gold piece in 1933 was worth $20.
Yeah. And
so
it would
let
buy
me
you
ask
a
you,
suit.
Let me ask both of you a question. Let's just say you were walking down the street in 1930, and someone were to come up to you, a bum. You know what a bum is, right? I'm sure all of you know what a bum is. And the
a
bum
lot
were
of people
to come
that
up
hang
to
out
you
on
and say,
DTR.
Hey, Mr. Jew and Mr. Pianki, can you spare $20? And you were in a good mood that day, okay? And in one pocket you have a $20 gold piece, and the other one you have a $20 bill. Mind you, this is 1930. Which one would you give him? Pianki?
I'd give him a $20 bill.
Why?
Well, if the gold is worth, what, $1,100, $1,600 an ounce now?
No, you're still back in 1930, Pianki.
Yeah, I got to get out of here.
Back
so
then.
Gotta do,
basically what you're
remarks.
Saying is that over the long term, that the paper money is going to decrease in value where the gold coin has gone up tremendously.
Did people know that in 1930?
They tricked everybody in 1933 and made it illegal for them to own gold and make them turn it in. That was one of the biggest heists that the government ever pulled on the people.
That sounds like wealth redistribution, doesn't it?
I'm going to give you a closing, Mark. We had a case here. A black police department locked somebody up, took their wallet, you know, like there was, you know, inventory and everything the person had. And he had a bill. I don't know if it was a $100 bill or a $20 bill or whatever, but it was rare. So the police chief took it and replaced it with a regular bill. I think it was $100. So when the guy gets his wallet back and he looks and says, well, this is not my, where's my money? You know, this man had to take people to court to get his money back.
Let me ask you, did the police chief go to jail?
He should have went to jail. I was thinking that.
He should have, but he didn't.
But I bet you he didn't.
Hell no. Matter of fact, I know the police chief. Well, I would know him later, but I didn't know him at the time. So anyway, that's my ending comment. I hope you enjoy those books. It was a good story about the redistribution of wealth. It has many names. I mean, many definitions, should I say.
No, I want to read about the entrepreneurs and everything they had to go through and how they persevered.
Yeah, me too. Can you repeat the list one more time? I know it was, specifically the office, because I know you said tribe.
I got them. Hold on. Let me look them up for you.
Fortune at the bottom of the pyramid.
Tribes was the author Jewel Kootlin, Kotlin. The subtitle is I can't remember the subtitle. That's a good book.
I'll give you the ones I just ordered, and you can buy both of these books
on Amazon.
I bought both of them for a total of $3.79. It's going to cost more for them to ship them to me. One is called Anatomy of a Hustle. Cable Comes to South Central LA by Galloway. And the other one's called Baker's Son. That's the one about the guy, the Jamaican guy. And
right,
I bought that for a penny. That's the Baker's Son.
Prison to President.
Well, I'm trying to keep it simple. $2 is plenty. If I read more than $2, I'm afraid my head may burst open.
And the other one, The Tribe, TRIBES, Jewel Kootlin. That's a real good book, too. There's a lot of good books out there. I have over a couple thousand books.
Now, why some didn't of you buy it for your Kindle, Beasley? Could have saved the shipping. It probably would have come out to the same amount.
Say that again, I'm sorry?
Why didn't you buy it for your Kindle? You could be reading it in 5 minutes.
I don't have a Kindle.
Yes, you do. You just don't know it.
Oh, I have a Kindle application on my computer.
Exactly.
I'd rather have the hard copy of the book.
You like sitting in parks? You like sitting in parks and reading the books?
Wherever you read it, I like to read in bed.
Are you one of those guys that sit in the parks and play chess?
No.
Got any closing remarks?
Love, hope, and lots of envelopes.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Cloud, maybe tomorrow Erica have a discussion on Senator Cantor.
You mean ex-Representative Cantor?
Yeah, that would be a good discussion.
Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out.
It's amazing that you just expect the incumbent to continually get reelected. But
I'm
happy
he's gone. I'm happy he's leaving. He's been in there what, 8 terms? Time to go.
I'm not sure. That's 16 years. That's average.
Time to go.
Jesse Jackson Jr. was there 17 years. Can you imagine screwing up a good job like that? Now, that's a good job. You don't even have to really show up to vote. You know?
Well, you know, Beasley, they're saying it's because of his lax position on immigration. Then, hell, only 30,000 people, well, a total of 50,000 people came out and voted. I think he got a little less than 30,000. The other person got like 30,000.
Well, I don't know
he's
if I would
party.
Call it lax. I would call it his support of immigration policy, specifically amnesty.
Well, I think that's what he was. I think that's what his constituent didn't want that. I think they took a hard-nosed approach on it, immigration reform.
I think they're also just sending a message that they're just tired of the status quo. They're just tired of the people in this district are just tired of the way things are going and the same old stuff.
Well, they have the Virginia don't care much for Obama.
No, they don't care. They don't care much for the rhinos, for the Republicans in name only.
Yeah.
You know, and it's further proof that all of these guys, they're bought and sold. So when they support legislation that's not in line with what their party thinks or what their constituent thinks, they decide that they didn't care about their party or their constituency. His 7th term of Virginia congressman, great humility. Yeah, he lost. I mean, adios. I don't know if it's going to make that much of a difference. I don't know if it's going to make that much of a difference.
Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out.
He'll be all right. He'll land on his feet.
I'm sure he'll be.
He'll find him a nice gig in the private sector, and he'll find a way to influence his former colleagues, and he'll get paid handsomely for it. Probably three or four times the money that he was getting as a representative.
No doubt he'll be stealing from people in no time.
Yeah. I mean,
his pension is about $15,000 a month.
Heck. That's enough to keep the Hanks off of you.
What's a Hank?
I don't know. I had a friend that used to say that. I was hoping anyone wouldn't ask me. I guess it's kind of like the leeches or the dirt or the. He'll be all
sure
right.
You sure that's not something they're dreaming after drinking a bottle or something?
I'm not sure.
I know a guy in Thailand, my neighbor. He did 5 tours in Vietnam.
drank a fifth of cognac every day. Used to come in my kitchen, drink coffee, and cry about all the slant eyes that he'd killed. And I used to ask him, I used to say, but you live in the land of slant eyes. Why are you doing that? Why don't you go to England or Australia?
He drank a
even
fifth.
Married one. He even married one.
He drank a fifth of cognac every
day.
In Payat or Payate or whatever they say, Payat, Thailand, where the average temperature is 86 degrees every single day.
More like 96 degrees, yeah.
Excuse me. Yeah, I'd be pretty miserable, too.
Don't forget the high humidity.
Do you have an air conditioner there?
Of course.
Right. It's like I'm not crazy.
An air conditioner in every room.
Are you headed back?
Yes. In fact, I had the air conditioner in my bedroom ran, I think, 24 hours a day.
Beats being hot.
Well,
I can be real nasty and mean when I'm hot.
You get used to it.
I don't like the heat. I bet you get used to it. You get used to any, you know, your body can adjust to all of it.
The Thai people walk around in long sleeves and they'll wear pants. Me, I was T-shirt and shorts all the time.
Yes, California gear and some flip-flops.
Yeah. My office was air-conditioned. Most places are air-conditioned, except if it's an outdoor eating establishment.
I heard you refer to a talk show host last night as a vagina.
It wasn't me.
Oh, yeah, it was you.